Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. Whether you're installing a patio or adding a new retaining wall, we have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast using our landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape blocks when you shop at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome to Bropostles, Episode 4, the comedy advice show for Catholics who take their faith seriously but not themselves. I'm Ethan.
And I'm Patrick. Ethan, what's going on in the news right now? Anything important?
I got this new executive chair for my office.
Yeah, I see it.
It's very comfortable.
It looks nice. It's fake leather. For those of you who aren't watching on YouTube, by the way, making sure to like and subscribe if you are. You can see Ethan's beautiful chair in 1080p high definition.
As far as news about chairs go, this is the biggest story.
Chair. The chair of Ethan and when his son sits in it.
Yes.
The chair of Peter.
But I did put Peter in this chair and I did spin him around yesterday because he helped me put it together. And that
was his
reward.
Yeah. You got to give him that.
You get to spin it. The whole time he's like, can I sit in it?
It's not
like,
yet,
it's not even a chair yet, buddy. Right now it is parts.
Once it's a chair, you can sit there.
Yeah. We got to make some serious retractions.
Do we now?
Last week we were on record. Verbal. Intense commitment from us that there is no chance that there will be an American Pope.
No one thought that was possible. No one thought that was possible. Even the pillar guys were like, an American Pope taking Leo the 14th was not on my bingo card, which is.
Yeah, kind of crazy. So I got to go out there and I just got to say my bank account will never have $1 million in it.
We will never become the number one podcast for Catholic young adults. Oh, wait. I already are. Now we're the number one new podcast for happening. Catholic young adults. It's crazy.
What do you think? So this is a comedy advice show, so we got to get to the advice. Nobody's asked any questions about the Pope yet. But what's your initial take? Everybody's probably wondering, what does Patrick think about the new Pope?
Well, if you are wondering, I think that taking the name Leo is a huge positive indicator, especially for an American. Leo the 13th was not 100% pro-American. He wasn't anti-American, but he did write a letter to the Archbishop of Baltimore that warned him against the heresy of Americanism, which if you look it up on Wikipedia, it's not obvious what it is right away. But based on reading the letter, the main problem that Pope Leo took for the Leo XIII took with America was that America's commitment to separation of church and state. So the idea that that religion has nothing to do with American public life, that was his main issue. And so an American taking Leo's name is not it's not taken lightly. Traditionally, you understand that like a pope taking a previous pope's name means that he is going to in some way be the spiritual son of that pope. That's one reason why the Francis papacy was so crazy, because he took the name of Francis. So he was like, my papacy is going to be nothing like any of that have come before me. Yes, correct.
He was right.
He was right. He called that shot, baby. And yep. He's like,
well done.
You know, and so taking the name Leo, not Benedict, not John Paul, not even Pius or John, right? Those are the other Vatican II popes. He took a pre-Vatican II name. Which is interesting, to say the least. So I think that's a good indication that he's going to be somewhat in line with that tradition. Vatican II. Also, he took the name of a pope that people sometimes consider to be the opposite of a Vatican II pope, because Pope Leo the 13th was very against freedom of religion, whereas Dignitatis Humanae is seen as this like American exceptional. Listen, everyone thinks America. Everyone thinks Dignitatis Humanae was this big American victory. We're like, yes, the American Constitution, the First Amendment has been enshrined in church law. Anyway, that's an important thing for you to know about the church. If you care about the church at all,
when you start speaking Latin,
when you start speaking Latin
outside of the liturgical context, I lose all interest.
Someone was upset that he didn't speak in English during his papal address. He spoke in Italian, Spanish, and Latin, and I posted. Mm-hmm. on my alt account, secret. Shh, don't tell anybody. I was like, oh, you mean he didn't speak in the vernacular? Good sign. Good sign.
Got him.
There are reports that he celebrates the Latin Mass himself, so that's a good sign for all the trad folks out there.
The biggest thing for me is that he's a registered Republican.
That's crazy.
Which is hilarious to have a registered TLM celebrating registered Republican Pope that also opposes Donald Trump and supported Black Lives Matter back in the day. He truly is the first woke right.
He's the woke right. I will say people are really mad about his like tweets against J.D. Vance and his tweets about George Floyd. He tweeted pray for George Floyd in May of 2020. Who among us?
Yeah.
I mean, no.
Who among us? I mean, he probably wasn't reading Ibram X. Kendi and doing podcasts about anti-racism
like we were, but
in 2020.
That is
a big we.
Big we. I approach it from a critical eye. But the only people who were even kind of against the George Floyd narrative were people on the right, very, very far on the right.
Yeah.
And it was a fringe because there was a lot of misinformation about it. I didn't even know until like 2 weeks ago that he died in the hospital. Everyone still thinks to this day. So like the George Floyd narrative is kind of unraveling 5 years later now that we have more information. Who would have thought? But, you know, just saying that is completely benign. I don't think he's like a.
No, I think it's funny. I think it's great. I think my official stance is that we are witnessing in real time the dawn of the American Catholic century. This is, if you are an American Catholic,
this is your time.
There's never been a better time.
We're
going to
have an American Pope. The Vance Rubio ticket is going to be crazy in 2028.
Yes.
It's going to happen. So much is going to happen. I for one, am happy that the American Catholic Church is finally getting the recognition it deserves. European Catholicism is crumbling. The American Catholic Church is the only important Western Catholic Church right now. At least the most.
When we take Catholicism to space, it's going to be felt banners. It's going to be Marty Haugen. It's going to be American space Catholicism to the T.
We're going to go to Mars you can do about on it. Eagle's wings. That's where we're going to go, baby.
You can't. You at home, you can't stop what's coming. So either get on board or get off.
The train. There's no. The people immediately. I think the only. When I heard them say Leonidas in Latin or whatever, Leona in Latin or whatever they said.
I wasn't listening live. I was in a work meeting. I don't know how all you people have time to watch live streams all day. Don't you have jobs?
My family, this is actually perfect. My family was sick, so I took a sick day. I had to work for myself.
Oh, that's true.
I took a whole day. So me and Leo got to watch it live. And so I got to tell him, you know, hey, the Pope's name is Leo. And he goes, I'm Pope.
That is kind of the bummer about having a son named Peter is that I can never go to him and be like, guess what?
Unless you're ready for the end of the world.
Which will come. I would like to thank Verso Jobs for sponsoring this podcast. If you are looking for a job or you're looking to hire, versojobs.com is the place to go. You'll hear more about that in the episode. I'd like to get to the first question because this is a comedy advice podcast.
And it's not about the Pope. First question.
It's not about the Pope. If people want to hear more of our takes on the Pope, they can subscribe to the bonus podcast.
We'll
patreon.com.
I'm going to have a little more time to research tonight. I'm not going to do what I forgot to do when the conclave started and start just posting about Pope stuff. So I'm going to post Cardinal Prevost biography thread tomorrow. I'm going to do a ton of research. The Pillar will have something. It'll be good.
It'd be so great if he had some type of Marian something that we could tie in.
He said,
"Look for that." Control F. Mary.
The Hail Mary during his papal address.
That's perfect. That was perfect. Put that. Slide that in there for our big launch on Monday.
Okay. Oh, also, he took the one quick other fun thing. He took the name Leo, and Leo was the one who I think wrote the Saint Michael prayer. Now he was the one who. Today is the day of that apparition of Saint Michael. It's a feast.
Today's also the day, Victory Day in Europe, where we defeated the Nazis.
You're welcome, Europe. Hey, it's the day.
It's
the day America liberated Europe again.
It's also the day that Kanye West released a song called Heil Hitler. So it's really quite the day.
It's quite a day.
Today.
I'm proud to be an American. All right. So,
yep.
First question, why has society's views on age difference in dating changed so much? I'm 25. The girl that I'm talking to is 20. This seemed to shock my secular friends. Oh, sorry. This would shock secular society when 30 or 40 years ago, this age difference is normal. Like, my parents are 6 years apart. Her parents are 8 years apart. Is it because of the expectation of sex in a relationship and that has become so normal that people view this type of exploitation? Or is it because society says women need to be free from men at 20 so they can live life to the fullest? What do you think, Ethan?
I don't think sex is the only thing that makes it weird. Like, if you're, let's say you're 20 and you're dating a 15-year-old, and let's say you're perfectly chaste, that's still kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know, like, 'cause what do you have in common with a 15-year-old? I think 200 years ago, when everybody was in the fields, you know, and no one can read, and all there was to do was go to the fields, come back in, you know, to the village, have a pint of locally brewed mead, and then pass out on your way home.
At room temperature at best.
At room temperature, you have so much more in common, right? Because you're both working the farm. You're both getting your hands dirty, right? A 20-year-old and a 15-year-old, not that different. Now, she's out there, you know, doing dances, and you are at college, you know, studying things or you're working. Very different. So I do think things have changed. I do think the age gaps are bigger, despite maybe in the past them not being as big. That being said, 25 and 20 is not crazy.
That's not weird at all.
Am I a pedophile for saying
no,
that?
No, I mean, a 20-year-old.
Lock me up.
A 20-year-old is different from a 15-year-old. Think about just the change that's occurred from your 15 to 20 versus your 20 to 25. Not huge.
Yeah. 15 to 20, not much happened. 20 to 25 is when puberty really started kicking for me.
I feel like I finally started growing hair on my chest when I hit 24.
A big,
you know.
Yes. Yeah. My voice dropped.
I mean, like, the
among other
someone
things.
In college versus someone in high school, extremely different stages in life. 15, you're not even, you're just getting your driver's license. You're barely even kind of an adult.
You're going during the allotted hours when you're allowed to drive to get froyo with your friends, and then you're coming straight home.
I didn't have a very strict
that's what
curfew,
you're doing.
So I stayed
15.
Out a long time. My mom only yelled at me.
There was a driver's license had a curfew. I wasn't allowed to drive.
I definitely broke that rule
in the state of Kansas. Oh, I never broke the law a day in my life. don't laugh. That makes them think that I did break the law.
You know, I don't think you've ever broken a law. Yeah, but the age gap. Okay, but the question is, why is it like socially less acceptable? I don't know. I'm hesitant to think it's the sex thing right off the bat. I think people are just kind of prudish in general. They're so afraid of being. It's not above reproach because they don't care about the premarital handholding and that sort of thing. Why is it that age gap is socially unacceptable today?
I don't know. Probably, I think people. I mean, it's the we've talked about this before, but the fetishization of the young woman in society, right? She is both everything that one ought to aspire to be. She is to be looked up to. She is to be protected from any types of threats. But she's also never allowed to do anything wrong, right? So it's like, we must protect her at all costs, but there's nothing that she can do that would ever be incorrect. I'm not saying this is good or bad. I'm just saying this is the way that our society treats women between the ages of 18 and 24, typically. Yeah. You have your run of the world for a time. And that's just, in exchange for childbirth, this is what we've given you as a culture.
We've given you this period where you can just do whatever.
And so I think people think, they look at these girls that are young, and it's like, you know, it's this implication that like a man who's not in that age bracket doesn't deserve to be with these goddesses that walk among us, these 18 to 24-year-old women that do run. They're in their own aristocracy. It's like a poor boy trying to date the princess, you know.
It's social taboo. There is also this idea that men, as they get older, become more predatory.
Gross.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because they say, he said it in his I think he said it a little bit in his question. There's a perceived power imbalance. You hear this whenever people talk about like consent between between like a professor and a student. There's no possible way you could consent because the professor has some kind of power over you. And so if
I have a question, what if the professor is kind of hot? Could you consent then?
I don't know. Who knows? So we were speaking about this earlier with like the whole BLM thing. We have this kind of ingrained Marxism in our mm-hmm. in our culturally liberal idea where the world is just kind of made up of individuals and these individuals have different power and the powerful will always oppress the weak. And so because someone is older, they're seen as more powerful. And so someone who's younger is seen as less powerful. And so the more age difference mm-hmm. there is, the more of a power imbalance that is perceived. And so you're obviously oppressing her because she could not possibly withstand the 5 years of seniority that you have on her, that you've amassed all of this power.
Yeah.
You know,
it's also, it's the other thing is funny is because it gives no agency to the 20 year old. It's like, she can't possibly choose to date someone that's a little bit older than her
because she has no
intellectual capacity to choose it because it has to be oppression. Yeah. That's fascinating. I do think all of those things are in play. I don't think there's one simple answer to this. I think it's baseline. Everybody loves women 18 to 24. Nobody likes men. And so it's always just going to be, you're always going to be kind of between a rock and a hard place. I think you should just keep dating her and marry her. And you should be fine. Who cares what society says anyway, you know?
Yeah, society gave us Avril Lavigne. So, you know, you should be a little...
For a time, and then they killed her and replaced her with someone
else. That's true. That is another conspiracy theory that I believe. My my conspiracy theory about Hiroshima and Nagasaki was recently made public, and I got excoriated for it.
You got excoriated because you quote tweeted the racist girl that was on Rumble or whatever.
The racist girl on Rumble. Button. You'll have to be more specific.
Nick Fuentes is his name. The lady Sarah Stock. Yes, yeah. She's great.
Yeah, I quote tweeted her because she was talking about how the atomic bomb was bad, and I was like, yes, this is true. Yeah. And Catholic.
Why'd you get excoriated for saying that it was a anti-Catholic bombing by the Masonic Harry Truman?
I think it goes against our founding myth, the modern American globalist myth.
Yeah, our technological and military might is the reason why we're the best in the world at everything.
No, I think the us winning World War II means we're the best.
How did we win World War II?
Through the bomb. Oh, through our military.
The reason that the myth is so powerful, is because we got to the technology first, and then it continued with the space race, and then the internet, and then it's Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah.
We need to maintain our military power. Then, I made a point that I thought was quite salient. The idea that the bombing is kind of our like modern world's version of the flood myth. This like large scale destruction mm-hmm. that was tragically necessary. I think that's our version of the flood myth. And then people got mad at me too.
But instead of Japan like rising up and eating us, they just made anime for a couple of years,
which destroyed our. You know? They hit us back with anime. That was a bomb.
Now that you mention it, yes, that is a kind of a worse thing that they could have done compared to like bombing us. I would rather them have nuked us back than give us anime.
All right, second question. I recently got into a debate with my roommate on the historical reliability of the Gospels. He claims they cannot be reliable and that they were not written by the people they were attributed to, including St. Paul's letters. I've been trying to read up on the subject and even looked at your toolkit, and you mentioned that no non-Christian sources dispute the accounts of the four Gospels. Can you expound on this and perhaps touch on the validity of the New Testament? Longtime fan of the cast. So he's been listening for all four episodes. P.S. I just spent 11 weeks in Ethan's home state, and I must say, horrible weather.
Fair. The toolkit that he mentions, you go to convinceyourfriends.com/toolkit. We have a Convince Your Friends toolkit where you can get a guide on how to have difficult conversations about the faith with your friends. convinceyourfriends.com/toolkit. That's what he's referencing.
And it's pay what you want.
I think Paul's... And it's pay what you want. So you can get it for free, or you can chip us a little dough. as the boys call it, out on the streets. I think you can reliably say that Paul's books, he said in it, I'm Paul writing to you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Paul. Like, yeah.
It's me. I'm Paul. It's also in the Gospels. I, Luke.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they say the name in the book. Now, could someone lie? No. So I think that kind of concludes that argument.
You don't see people disputing the authors of the Gospels until like the 1800s. So you have to keep that in mind. That like the historical criticism only happened after the Enlightenment. So I mean they're like, oh yeah, based on these two different turns of phrase in the beginning and the end, we can tell there's multiple authors. They do this with the Old Testament too. This prophecy can't possibly be legit because it's not possible for prophecy to happen. So obviously this is someone writing after the fact. Silly. The one way that you can tell is that the early church did know that there were people that were writing under pseudonyms. Like I did a thread on the Proto-Evangelium of James, which is attributed to James, and the early Christians in the 400s.
The Provo-Evangelium of James, and it's just about Utah.
Okay. Nice.
Sorry. Just trying to keep myself entertained.
Yeah, I get it.
Over here.
The people want information, and I
know they I'm do. I'm sorry. you're helping the people. I am helping. I'm really just helping
you're
me.
Helping
so please
the other
continue.
People that don't care about this, which I get. I understand.
It's, no, I do care. I think this is good. I think this is good. This is important stuff. We need to be, sometimes we have to be a Catholic show. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those moments, right?
You don't see any early you don't see any early sources denouncing that the Gospels were not written by the actual Gospel authors. The only one that has like credible modern evidence of like, oh, maybe this was written by later disciples is the Gospel of John. But most Orthodox Catholic theologians and historians don't deny the validity of the Gospel of John. Like this was written by John. Perhaps with an editor because he was old, right? So you don't see any early non-Christian sources like Josephus. You don't see them denouncing the Gospels as written by illegitimate sources. And you do see those people getting people in the early church like the popes denouncing things like the Proto-Evangelium of James, saying, "Hey, this is not the Bible because it wasn't written by who says wrote it." There was a thing in the early church where people would take the name Dionysius, pseudo. Am I saying that right? Dennis, whatever. And we have a guy who wrote under the name of Dennis.
I only read Percy Jackson one time,
that makes you an expert. So you don't see anybody. I should have prepared a little bit more for this question. I didn't know about this.
That's okay, man.
But just
that's
off right. the cuff.
I think that's a good answer. I think, nobody disputes it until the 1800s. I think the burden of proof is on him for something that was believed unequivocally for most of the time that it existed, and then only was brought into dispute when the thing falls out of favor, you know, socially, culturally, and politically. Yeah. I think, so you proved to me, how is this not, you know, this is the Bible, right? This is it's kind of like saying Shakespeare didn't write those plays. Okay.
Prove that.
Prove it. Like, how do you, what evidence do you have that Shakespeare did? Because otherwise, I think Occam's razor would dictate that we should just believe the simplest thing, which is the people who said that they wrote it and everybody for centuries who agreed that those guys wrote it, that they wrote it. Not that it was some type of cover up that hundreds and thousands of Christians in the first 100 years of Christianity died for, you know? So
also in the toolkit, I think we go that's over that would... people didn't denounce the events of the gospel. The toolkit is like a series of premises that build on each other. And so one of the premises that like the gospels are historically reliable, that doesn't hinge on them being written by the original authors. So even if the authors didn't write the Gospels, you don't have to prove the authors wrote the Gospel. You have to prove that what happened in the Gospels actually happened, and no contemporary sources deny what happened. Even the Pharisees don't deny that the tomb was empty. Even Josephus doesn't deny the tomb was empty. They just deny that they just have some other theory, right? It's like, oh, the apostles must have stolen the body. that's silly. They were tortured and they never recanted their stories, right? And so you can at least say like, hey, it's likely, or it's very, very likely, almost to the point of certain, that the events of the gospel did take place. And so from there you can build, okay, well, things in the gospel took place, then Jesus is probably God. You know, if he did rise from the dead and said, I'm God, and then died and rose from the dead, he is probably God.
We go more in depth on this in our course. Guy who wrote this question, if you want our course and you want it for half off, just send me an email, ethan@proapostles.com, and you can learn more about all this stuff if the podcast answer was not sufficient.
We should start doing that Dave Ramsey thing where he like has people call and he goes, I'll give you a copy of my book. That's fun. If you write a question about the toolkit.
If you write in a question, you get half off, guaranteed. Let's talk about Verso Jobs for a second. Patrick, you're fired.
What did I do, bot?
You didn't get me the pictures of Spider-Man.
Well, this is a first for me. I've never been fired, but I'll take it with stride, and I will go to Verso Jobs to find a new place of employment. I'm not a good culture fit here anyway, so.
What is Verso Jobs you're talking about? All I care about is pictures of Spider-Man. I don't go on the computer.
But that's how I email you the pictures. That's why you don't have any pictures of Spider-Man in your email. Verso Jobs is a new way for employers and employees to find each other, to match based on culture and skills, as opposed to just random AI-generated resumes getting read by AI robots. And it's just Indeed and ZipRecruiter are just AI machines at this point, and everyone's just a bunch of nodes floating around in space. But you're not a node. You're a dude. You're a girl. You're a person. And so you can go to versojobs.com, and you can register as a seeker, a job seeker, and you can get on their list to make sure that you are the first one to know when companies are looking for people like you.
That's versojobs.com. Get me pictures of Spider-Man. That's versojobs.com.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/andysgirls or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andysgirls.
Boys, I need some advice. I'm 18, and next year I'll be serving with Net Ministries, meaning I'll have been on a dating fast. I'll be on a dating fast next year. How do those go? Do you know?
They never go wrong. They always go perfectly, and you never break anybody's heart when they're over in another country.
Yeah, when they moved to Israel. That was right. I still have a couple of months until I leave.
She didn't move. She was just there.
In Israel.
She didn't move there. She was just in Israel.
Yeah. When you go to Israel for no reason. I have a couple of months till I leave. I'm having trouble not flirting with girls. Really? That 18-year-old boy. For some background, last year I was not ready to date for several reasons. I was also just fat and kind of sucked. Brother.
I love the honesty. Yeah. We have both of those on this podcast. We have fat and kind of sucked.
Hey, they're both me.
No! Come on.
But because I moved to a really solid Catholic community, I've made some great friends of my gender, which is good. He's a guy friends. That's super important. Mm-hmm. And moved around, I was able to become more of the man that God wanted me to be. However, this has had some unintended consequences. I love flirting, but last year, it didn't really mean anything. I would flirt with girls. They weren't into me. I would go sulk and be a hopeless romantic. But now I've matured a bit.
Dude, did I write this? Did I get in a time machine and write this question?
This is your hot take time machine. But then I matured and I lost some weight. And now when I say hey to a girl, they say hey right back. Listen, brothers, you are 10 to 20 pounds away. It's not even 30. It's not even 40. You are 10 to 20 pounds away from just being a catch. All right. This is definitely a little scary because I used to be secure in the fact that I was mid, but now I have the big three, believes in God, doesn't watch porn, and isn't awkward. It actually really cool. It's really cool that girls have been into me. My question is, how can I become more like Spider-Man and exert the responsibility that comes with this new power? Second, I'm doing a dating fast. I pretty much decided I shouldn't date until next year when I leave. However, I do have this lingering thought in my mind. What if it's God's will for me to ask this girl out? I don't have any particular girl in mind, but I'm definitely feeling conflicted over whether I should pursue anyone at all right now. Thanks so much. Please keep me in your prayers.
I love it when I meet another guy who's in it for the love of the game.
He just loves flirting.
Flirting is one of the greatest things you can do because it's so fun. Can I just say that? I'm married. I've been married for nearly 4 years now. I don't flirt with anyone now other than my wife. And even when I do flirt with my wife, sometimes she's just like, leave me alone. So maybe I'm a bit rusty when it comes to the flirting game. But there's nothing wrong with this. I think it's bad to like lead people on. I don't think you should do that, right? If you are just flirting for your own satisfaction to make yourself feel good. Because you are insecure and you want girls to like be nice to you and you're not really pursuing anything with them. You're just kind of being a flirt just to be a flirt. That is no good. Don't do that. But if you're like single and you're actually like looking for women and you just flirt with ladies because you like them, you think they're cute, you want to see if it's going to go anywhere. I think that's great. I think more guys should do that. I think the boy... The modern boy needs to flirt.
I've been saying this.
Flirting is something that we've lost.
Men are. I asked my wife this question, and she answered immediately. So this comes from my wife. I was like, "Who do you think is more romantic, men or women?" And she said, "Men. Men are more romantic than women. Women like romance more than men do. They like to be romanced. But all the best love songs, love poems, love stories have been written by men." When women write love stories, they become very rich on Kindle, but it's all weird and has werewolves in it. When men write love stories, they become these timeless classics because the male heart wants to pursue. You want to chase, and this is good. And you get these little chases where you you flirt with a girl, and she loves it because she feels desired, and you love it because you get to do the little chasing thing. Do it. It's great. It's awesome. I think when people say, "Oh, he's a flirt," or "She's a flirt," they use it as a pejorative. What they mean is this person likes to lead people on. This person just likes to, make people feel like they're kind of flatterers. They don't really mean what they say. But if you, you like a girl, you flirt. Just don't do it in front of other women because they get jealous. Definitely don't flirt with a girl in front of your future wife. I would recommend that. That has some problems.
Or your current
wife. Definitely not your current wife, I would say. That's a really bad idea. man, you should flirt with girls. You're not on a dating fast yet. Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? There's nothing, nothing matters until then. I also want to address your last question here. I have this lingering fear in the back of my mind. What if it's not? What if it's God's will that I'm supposed to ask this girl out and I don't do it? First of all, shut up.
Agreed.
I do think 18-year-old boys do need to, you need to be strongly encouraged. You're very good. These are all good things. Keep doing things. But I also think you need to be told in the most severe of terms, shut up, please. Because it's just such a juvenile understanding of what God's will is. It's not that God doesn't care about the littlest parts of our life. He does. But God doesn't want you wrapped up in like every, well, okay, so I could have milk or I could have orange juice. Like, what's God's will for me in this moment? I think you could call that scrupulosity. I think you could call it any number of things, but it's like a pride in thinking that like every choice that you make is so important and everything about your life is so important that it has to be wrapped up in this like divine cosmic overarching plan. everything you do is wrapped up in a divine overarching cosmic plan. And the means by which that happens is through your intellect and through your reason. You make choices every day that are informed by your experiences, by what you know, by what you've learned, by what you want and what you feel and what you hope for. Like, all of that has been given to you by God. So trust that, like, you've been made a certain way and that you are operating a certain way and that you can go and do things because of how you've been made and because of what you know and because of what you believe to be good and true. And that that's in accordance with God's will, without, like, concerning yourself over the individual moments of what about this girl? Or what about that girl? Or should I have done this at the bar? Should I have done that? At the bar? All that is loser stuff. Like, you just got to be confident that you've been given everything by God and that there's really no way to screw it up as long as you're, like, trying to love him and, like, be in relationship
with
him.
There's an Augustine quote that gets played a lot is love and do what you will. Like, love God, pray, and the prayer is an act of conforming yourself to God's will. Like, that happens in prayer. You understand God and you read the Psalms and you understand how he thinks and how he wants human beings to think. And then you think like that and you just become, like, you know, so ingrained with the soundtrack of Christ's mind, just in your head. Like, that Christ's inner monologue is the Psalms. The Psalms are great. And you read them over and over again.
It's just funk music.
It's lo-fi beats to study / redeem humanity too. You know, you just listen to the Psalms over and over again, and you become so in tune with God's will that you just start wanting things and you go, oh yeah, I'm going to go pursue that. And then God kind of blesses it. You'll run into this when, like, this kind of thinking never goes away. You'll run into it when you get married and you start going, like, okay, so we're doing NFP, so we could theoretically just never have kids. So you have this, like, agency, right, where you're like, oh, I could just decide that I'm open to life, or decide that we need to not. What do I do? And this person was like, you just conform yourself to the will of God and you will want the kids that you have and you will not want any more or less. And so it's like, it's an important decision, right? It's like, actually, I think this analogy works really well, because the you're not deciding to have a kid. You're deciding to do something that could lead to that. So with flirting, it's like, you're not deciding to date this girl or ask this girl out. You're not deciding to marry this girl, but you're deciding an action that could lead to something huge. So just pray more.
Flirting is like the sex of dating.
This is what I've always said.
Yes. Your words are like the sperm of the interaction.
Yes, you are sowing the seeds. Never mind.
We should give talks.
the masculine role is to sow the seeds. He tills the soil and he plants life in his bride. And so, you know, you're sowing the seeds of romance in this woman. Just pray more, and then if you feel like it, do it.
Here's a couple of lines you could try. Hey girl, you looking like a egg.
Good girl, are you the romantic equivalent of an ova? Of an ovum?
Hey, can I get three drinks for my fine ovums over here?
What up, my ovums? With the hard M. Oh boy.
Oh, I think that's great. You're doing great. These are good things to be asking yourself when you're 18. Please don't get too wrapped up in your head about any of it, because it'll just make you weird. So you just keep the course. You're doing great.
There's an old adage about seminarians discerning the priesthood. This guy wakes up every morning in the seminary and he grabs his sink and he looks into the mirror and he goes, God, are you calling me to be a priest? He does that every morning. And then one day he gets up, he does the same thing, grabs his sink, God, are you calling me to be a priest? And he walks out of the seminary and he walks across the street and gets hit by a bus and dies. And so it doesn't really matter. God was not calling him to be a priest. He was calling him to die, getting hit by a bus. So you don't know what God's will is. So you might as well just do what you will. Okay, next question.
This is a long one, so everyone buckle up. I haven't read this. I have not pre-read, so I think this one came to my email.
Fourth question. Hello, my name is Josh. I am 36 and a practicing Catholic. I'm an identical twin. Come on. Don't date a 30-year-old. You'll get excoriated. I'm an identical twin. Oh, no, we had brutal. Plenty of friends in high school. I mostly just wanted to spend time with my twin. Our mom thought it would be best if we went to college separately. I started dating what I would consider to be low-quality women. Everyone has dignity, but I was dating women who I found unattractive. I just wanted the attention.
I get it.
I still maintained my faith, went to mass, etc. I met a girl named Lindsay after I transferred schools. We ended up dating for 5 years. She ended up meeting her husband at a bar while we were dating and then broke up with me. And then I jumped from nurse to nurse, spending time. Bad call, man. Spending time on money on nothing against nurses. Sorry, I can't.
Nurses are wonderful if you find the right ones. There are some nurses that will ruin your life.
That's true. My experience with nurses is not. Anyway, all right. Spending time and money on plenty of dead-end relationships, some Catholic, some not. I got a teaching job in 2016 after graduating in 2013. Old, I had to substitute teach for 3 years to land a full-time teaching job. I didn't date for 2 years. Moved to Nebraska, ended up meeting a girl while an attorney in Kansas. Is this good, Tweetman?
Let's go. This is a Kansas. This is a Kansas-centric episode. Can I say that? This could be good, Tweetman.
It's super not. He doesn't listen to our show. I moved 4 hours south in Nebraska. Oh, I read that. We dated for a year and a half. She didn't really like me that much, according to friends and family who knew us both. I tried to long distance, and that didn't work, so I thought I might talk to a vocations director. No one told me I should be a priest, other than in condescending terms, because I just tried to live my faith. They didn't think I was a perfect fit either, and so I continued teaching. Then in September, I met a girl in Missouri. The part of Nebraska I live in is only an hour and a half from Kansas City. As it turns out, she is a Lutheran and has an 8-year-old son from a previous relationship. She was never married. We've been dating ever since. Everyone tells me how beautiful she is. Trust me, I've also been told that I can't do better, etc.
Okay.
I do love her. However, in order to be closer to her, I have to move 3.5 hours away from my home, 5 hours away from my family. Ooh. She would like it if I moved in with her as she owns a home, but I'm going to live at her mom's house and be roommates with her 21-year-old brother. Forever, I thought this was a great idea because I fell in love fast. Now everything is happening. I'm terrified. I feel like I have all these doubts. I proposed to her at Notre Dame. She said yes. We are supposed to get married in June of 2026 on the Feast of Sacred Heart. Okay. We're going through marriage prep. According to that test, we're compatible. My dating life has been a nightmare. I'm not sure if I missed out on a vocation. I also hope she converts to Catholicism, as I've been to her Lutheran church a few times after Mass, and it's a joke. Obviously, you can't find truth anywhere but the church, and their service feels arbitrary. Anyways, if you guys and your listeners... I lost Ethan. You still there?
I'm back.
Hello. While you're gone, Bronze Age Pervert said that only elected officials of the United States government should appoint bishops. American bishops. And I was like, it's crazy to see Gallicanism in 2025. That's insane.
I got a quote tweeted by Sola Chad while I was gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's to that reply that I made to George Hayworth that Jesus instituted the papacy. And he said, what if I told you that's one of the biggest twistings of scripture and history? And I just replied and said, okay.
What if I said something stupid and wrong? All right. Awesome.
I just don't have time to argue with Protestants, dude. It's just a waste. of time. Kind of is there. All right. Let's finish out this question. Sorry, Ryan. You're going to have to cut it right here. You were at... So the last thing I heard was, obviously, you can find truth anywhere.
Yeah, so at that point, he kind of just talks about Lutheranism for a bit, but and then asks to pray for him, for his fiance and her son. So what do you think about this?
It all seems very fast to me. I'm not saying call off the engagement. Why are you living at her mom's house? I understand because you can't live with each other. That's great. I love the lack of cohabitation. In fact, I think that's one of the best parts of this story. You gave a lot of context for. I don't even know what the question is. Are you just scared?
The question is, he wants to know our thoughts on
this.
Yeah. He's like, I feel like he has all these doubts. He feels like he fell in love fast. Everything's happening. He's terrified. Feels like things are moving too fast. Yeah. I think things are moving too fast.
Yeah. In order to be closer to her, I have to move 3.5 hours away from my current home and 5 hours away from family. She would like it if I moved in with her. She owns a home. I'm going to live at her mom's house. Why do you have to? Can you get an apartment? Why do you have to live at her? I guess it's probably cheap. I guess it makes sense probably, but you're 36. You're an attorney. Can you get an apartment?
I'm sure.
I don't know. Maybe that's
something.
Yeah.
I think all the based on your context, it sounds like you're making all of these decisions based on your previous experiences in relationships.
Yeah. She's going to leave you is what it seems.
Yeah.
Like.
Or like this is your only shot. It's not your only shot. Now, usually here on Bropostles, we are extremely pro moving for a relationship. You're muted, by the way. I can't hear you. Oh, there you are. You're back. Wait, talk.
Hello.
There you go. Okay. That was strange. But this does seem a little quick. It is kind of fast. It's just make sure that you're not doing this because you think she's your last ticket out of singleness. You got some time. Not a lot of time, but you got some time.
Yeah.
You have more time than a woman does at 36, but
yeah,
that's just a reality. But like, you know,
I think I don't think there's anything wrong inherently with this. Right.
No.
However, the other thing that you said, so the whole moving thing, the fact that you're scared, you should be excited to move across the country to live with the woman that you love. Right.
Yes.
Like there should be some part of you that's like, oh, I want to do this. I can't wait to do this. I'm so excited to be married. Da, 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 da. So I think that's a yellow flag. The other yellow flag is, I hope she converts to Catholicism. Like that can't just be something that you wish cast out into the ether and like hope it comes true. So, I would just make sure that if it's something that's really important to you, that you talk about it before June, 20th or whatever day the Feast of the Sacred Heart is, 2026, right? Like you gotta, I would talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
because that's
religion is top four of reasons why people divorce. So you should probably get that locked. And they don't always make you talk about it on Marriage Encounter or on during marriage prep. They don't always make you talk about it. They usually just want to make sure you're not living together. Or boinking. You usually don't want to.
Yeah. So I don't think this is bad. I would just maybe think and pray about some of the doubts that you're feeling. I don't think they're coming from nowhere. Sometimes when you're getting engaged, there's like a proper amount of like, is this really what I want to do? You know, do I want to do this or do I want to do something else? And sometimes that's just like you not wanting to lose your freedom, right? Because you have to make a choice. And like, that's the last choice that you make, right? You choose to marry someone. That's it. You're not marrying anybody else. Yeah. You're in, right? And that's a big choice. And so naturally it would come with like questions, right? Is this really what I want to do? Why do I want to do it? Does she want to do it? But if you have already agreed to do it and you're still feeling doubtful and scared and hesitant and you're not sure how things are going to shake out, maybe there's something deeper going on. Only you can know that. We only have the information that you gave us. So I think you're fine. I think moving to Missouri is a big mistake. I think you should live in Kansas. I think that's actually the biggest red flag in all of this is that you're moving to Missouri without someone pointing a gun at your head.
Yeah. Geez. Which might happen in Missouri. So you got to be careful about that.
Right. That's true. A Missouri Synod Lutheran.
There you go. If you have to marry a Lutheran, that's probably your best bet.
Those are some of the best out there.
You know? One of the few. You gotta have a talk about religion. You're also probably nervous because all of a sudden you're gonna have an 8-year-old. That's crazy. All of a sudden you're a dad, like right away. That's tough. Mm-hmm. You gotta get rid of some of that baggage. I would recommend, you mentioned that you have a lot of guy friends now. Right? That was him? No, that was another. That was the other guy.
It was a different guy. Yeah.
Hopefully you have a lot of guys. You got to talk it out with your boys. Okay.
Call up your ex-girlfriend that broke up with you in the bar when she met her new husband. What do you think I should do?
It sounds like you got a lot of baggage. You got to talk it over with your guys. You got to get rid of some of that. You don't necessarily have to go to therapy. I would recommend
better idea. Better idea. He's an attorney. use the billable hours with your clients to ask them questions about your relationship.
Genius.
Get paid for therapy.
Genius.
How come, no one else, how come more people don't do this? Yeah, this is great. Just start slipping 15 minutes. That'll be $200. Thank you. You really helped me out. Fork over that cash.
Please. Just ask you a couple questions. Yeah, I think you that your long soliloquy prior to your question shows that there's something in your past you have to address before you make this call. That's all I see. You can't take all that into a marriage. You gotta just like let it go. Because if you don't, it's gonna come up later in your marriage. Like that's the thing about marriage that's the thing about marriage is like you're gonna bring all this baggage in, and you know there's like the whole you're naked without shame, right? You have your whole life that's emotionally and physically, and so you're gonna bring that into your marriage, and all you're gonna have to deal with it. With it's gonna be a roadblock for you fully trusting her. You know, you have this person who is extremely committed to you, all of a sudden leave you on a dime. That's gotta have shaped the way you view people that are committed to you, right? You probably have a little bit of abandonment problems, you know, but just talk that out with your boys. That's what boys are for. You talk about that with them. You kind of work through it, be like, yeah, I'm kind of being a little wimp. I got to go do it. This is not to say you're making a bad decision moving there for her. In fact, I think it's a good decision in general, but you gotta do a little work before that happens. And then to be in a little bit more of a healthier spot.
Yeah. I'm with it. Cool. Let's do the last question. We can get out of here.
Someone sent me this question, so I'm looking forward to asking it. It's about Ozempic. So my friend's dad is a doctor and is willing to prescribe me Ozempic at cost. So it's $200 for 10 weeks. I'm really considering it. I can eat enough to maintain my weight, but it hasn't decreased in years despite working out regularly. Is it really so bad to acknowledge I don't have the willpower to eat less and drop the pounds without chemical assistance?
I can eat and what do you mean I can eat and oh, so you're trying to lose weight, but you're like, I can eat enough to maintain my, that's not the problem is whether or not you can eat. We know you can eat enough to maintain your weight. That's why you're considering the Ozempic.
Yeah.
I don't understand that sentence of the question. I eat enough to maintain my weight, but it hasn't decreased in years despite working out regularly. Yeah. Cause working out doesn't.
No,
working out isn't the thing that reduces your weight. It's eating less than
than you take in.
Working if you eat out, the same amount and work out, you'll get bigger. Actually,
yes. The that is one thing. Is working out doesn't necessarily decrease your weight. The other thing is, and this is kind of blind leading the blind here, is that sometimes when you work out, you eat more because you're hungrier. That's just how it is. So you have to be extremely diligent about making sure you're getting enough to build muscle, but not enough to put on pounds. Protein builds muscle. You have to eat more protein and more leaner proteins like yogurts and lean fish.
Yogurt. Lean meat. Yogurt.
Greek yogurt is awesome. 10 grams of protein per 100 grams of yogurt. It's basically just protein. It's better for you than a protein shake. Non-fat Greek yogurt. Put a little zero calorie sweetener in there so it's not disgusting. And you're good. It also is the same thing as sour cream, so you can use it on tacos, and it's not as fattening. But I would say we don't know enough about Ozempic yet to be like,
yeah,
do it.
I just don't like the, you know, oh, I'm just going to acknowledge that I don't have the willpower to eat less to drop the pounds. You do. You're just not using it. Like you've just decided that, oh, that's something that I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like it's not, you know, like you can eat less, you're just choosing not to. I understand it's hard, but don't give up. Like I don't know, I get the Ozempic thing.
The cost is not the problem. The monetary cost for Ozempic is not the problem. The problem is that you're getting a cosmetic change and the habits aren't.
Yes. So what happens when you run? When you're out of your Ozempic, you're just going to keep buying more pills, and your whole life is just taking pills to stay thin because you won't change your habits.
Yeah.
Like
on the willpower thing, on the willpower thing, the trainer that I'm working with, that I'm doing a social media for and exchange for personal training. No, his name's not Tony. His name is Rod, and he's great.
Rod.
He's 50 years old, and he's in better shape than I am. But that's not hard to do, but it is hard to do at 50. And he's been training people for years, and he is anti-willpower. He's like, your problem is not willpower. You don't just have to like grit it and do it. He's like, it's about a mindset shift. You have to shift your mindset. All right. Bear with me on this. It's like when you have this like little, you have this little bully in your brain that's getting mad at you every time you eat a cookie. And it's like, you shouldn't have done that. Uh-huh. You suck. And now you're creating the identity of, I'm the person who cheats. I'm the kind of person who eats carelessly. Right. Instead, you have to like shift your mindset about eating to be like, I'm not dieting. I'm eating first to nourish my body. And that's the priority. And then I eat for enjoyment. You can set up rules for yourself about like, I only eat during these windows, right? So like the morning window, afternoon, evening window, that's been helpful for me to kind of keep down the snacking. And then eating with, you know, prioritizing protein, eating that first, because it fills you up faster than plants, than everything else. So like you can have dessert every night if you want, but just make sure you fill up on protein and on plant-based things like vegetables. And then you're not going to want as much dessert. The other thing is watch the desserts.
It's not true.
It's not true.
I eat a very heavy protein diet, and every night I'm housing a pint of ice cream.
But I know the ice cream, it's homemade, isn't it?
Some of it's homemade.
Yeah. So that is the thing, is like
that's true.
When you get like a serving of ice cream from like the Breyers natural or like homemade ice cream, you have a serving and it's like 300 calories. You go to Cold Stone and you get like one of their concoctions and it's like 1200, or like a pint of Ben and Jerry's. You know, a pint of Ben and Jerry's is different than a pint of Breyers. You know,
Breyers is crazy. If you ate a whole tub of Breyers, you'd be liable to grow a third arm, I think. I don't know what they put in that stuff, but it's not healthy for you.
Oh, I get the natural one that doesn't have any extra ingredients in it. It's just milk. You look at the ingredients. There's nothing else in it.
All right. Are you just going to believe Big Dairy after all these years? What they've done to us?
Breyers used to be the natural one. It used to be like the top shelf.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. If you get the problem is people get the ice cream with all the junk in it. Like you get the cookie dough or the cookie. That's where all the nasty, crappy stuff comes in. But if you're just getting vanilla, which is what I get. You'll be okay. This is not an ice cream podcast, although it very well could be. I think you should not get the Ozempic. I think you should just eat less. Yes. And you should use the mindset thing that Patrick talked about. You can do it. You've been telling yourself for forever that you can't do it, but that's not true. You can do it.
Step one, find your basal metabolic rate. Go on one of those counter things and put in your height and your weight and find out, you know, I burn... Just sitting around on my butt all day, I burn 1,900 calories, 2,000 calories. Mm-hmm. Figure out meals, divide that by three. Figure out meals that get you mostly protein. So like, you know, a gram of protein per pound of yourself, 0.7 grams per pound. Figure out some meals you can have regularly, eat the same kinds of things for lunch, for breakfast, for dinner, all every day. And then walk more. If you walk five, I think it's if you walk 5,000 steps, you add an extra 250 calories to a deficit. And then
if you can walk 500 miles, then you could walk 500 more.
If you walk 5,000
steps, just to be the man that walks 1,000 miles.
Eat your basal metabolic rate, walk 10,000 steps a day. 10,000 steps is 500 calories typically for the average size guy. 5,000 calorie deficit a week puts you at about like 0.5 pounds a week lost. And that's like 2 pounds a month. So you want to walk and then you're working out. So you're putting on muscle, right? So like just figure out that and be like, all right, this is the plan. And then put in a little tracker, right? Like if I keep eating like this, what's my weight going to be in 6 months? And be like, if I keep eating like this, I'm going to be at Ozempic levels in 6 months anyway. And this is it's building healthier habits. I'm going to feel better when I do this. That's the other thing about mindset. It's like I know that I feel better when I stick to my high protein diet. I know that I'm going to feel worse if I don't eat, and then I'm going to gorge myself on the trail mix that's available at work, and I'm not going to feel full. And that's just peanuts and M&Ms. It's not good for me. You know, I know I'm going to feel worse if I do that. So just it's shift your mindset. It's cheaper and it's easier and it's better for you in the long run. We don't know what Ozempic is doing to people. So let's not do that yet.
That's it for Bropostles this week. Patrick's going to let us know the unhinged comment of the week. We pull these from YouTube every week. If you'd like to be the unhinged comment of the week, go to youtube.com/Bropostles, click subscribe, and leave us a little funny. Leave us a little joke that we can tell.
The unhinged comment of the week is Bropostles as joint popes would be crazy. Crazy. The craziest part is that we would be the second and third American popes. So that's wild.
We would be like Roman and Kendall when they were COO, CEO, when Logan passed out, you know, that one time.
We would be like Mitchell Musso and Doc Shaw in Pair of Kings.
Whoa. Whatever happened to Doc Shaw? Is he doing okay?
I hope so.
I hope
we know what happened to Mitchell Musso. It wasn't great.
We do know what happened to Mitchell Musso. If you like the show and you want to support it, patreon.com/Bropostles is the place to go. We've got a great Discord community of patrons. We also have a bonus show we do for $10 a month. Patrons, go to patreon.com/Bropostles. We're going to talk all about the Pope, everything Pope Leo the 14th, our thoughts, our reactions, what we think this means for the future of the church. That's going to be happening this week and more on the bonus cast, patreon.com/Bropostles. Thank you to Verso Jobs for sponsoring this episode of Bropostles. We'll see you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. Whether you're installing a patio or adding a new retaining wall, we have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast using our landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape blocks when you shop at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.